we need partnerships because we can do so much more together than we can do on our own, right? Just to give an example, the trailer that we watch, that took place during the Second World War. And when Germany advanced into France, they trapped a lot of Allied troops on the beaches of Dunkirk. So the soldiers eventually would die there unless a big rescue operation was organized. So hundreds of civilians, okay, hundreds of civilian boats decided to work together. They decided to rescue French, British, Belgian, and Dutch soldiers. How did they do it? By working together. By working together, they saved people. They had big boats, medium boats, small boats, all boats working together to save people from death. And I don't know if you could remember the number they've shown. I'm not sure if that is the correct number, but we are talking about hundreds, I mean, of people. Almost 400,000 people were saved just because civilians worked together. So we need to partner because we can do so much more when we work together than we could do on our own. But there is another reason as well. In that film, in that event that took place in the Second World War, we are talking about physical human beings, right? We are not talking about their souls. And in reality, we know that we are not only made of flesh, we also have a spirit. And we know that without Jesus, those who are not saved, they're going to die as well, but to die for all eternity. So we all know that there are many more people right now trapped, not by soldiers, not by the Nazis, but by sin. So the numbers are brutal. And the brutal fact is we need to work together. Otherwise, many people would die. More than 5 billion people right now, as I speak, they don't identify themselves as Christians. And just to filter that, just in London, more than 8 million people are heading to eternal death. So if we want to see some of them being rescued, we need to work together. Just to see a shift of 10% in London, just to make something around 874 new disciples, we would need to plant at least 13,656 new churches, considering the number of people we have here per church, 664 people per church. So we need a lot of church reaching a lot of people who needs help, who need our help. So we need to work together. We need to save these people. Another reason why we need to be partnering is because it's biblical, isn't it? We need partnerships because it's biblical. The Bible is full of passages about partnerships. And let's look at some of them right now. I'm going to ask some of you to be reading this Bible passage for us. So if you can grab your Bible, it would be good. So let me see here. Jay, do you mind reading for us Romans 15, verses 22 to 24? And James, do you mind reading for us Philippians chapter 4, verses 15 and 16? And David, do you mind reading for us Corinthians chapter 3, verses 5 to 9, please?
Is it 1 or 2 Corinthians?
I'm sorry. Yeah, 2.
Let me know you're ready, bro.
Great. You can get started, Bray, please.
This is the reason why I've so often been hindered from coming to you. But now, since I no longer have any room for sort of work in these regions. And since I've longed for many years to come to you, I hope to see you in the past as I go to Spain and to be helped on my journey there by you. Once I've enjoyed your company for a while, at present, however, I'm going to Jerusalem bringing aid to the saints.
Thank you. We, as a church, at my local church, we are going through the book of Romans. And I keep telling them, I mean, Paul wrote that letter for many reasons. He wanted to clarify what the gospel is all about. But he also had a plan, right? He wanted them to partner with them in a new project, in a new church planting project. And it's beautiful to see that Paul wants the church in Rome to be with him in this new endeavor. And by the end of the letter, we see Paul mentioning names, many of them. So from verse 1 to verse 16, in chapter 16, Paul mentions the names of those who worked with him, who were working with him. So we need to partner because it's biblical. Let's look now at Philippians chapter 4, verse 15 and 16. James.
Moreover, as you Philippians know, in the early days of your acquaintance with the gospel, when I set out from Macedonia, not one church shared with me in the matter of giving and receiving, except you only. For even when I was in Thessalonica, you sent me aid more than once when I was in need.
So it's great to see again Paul writing a letter mentioning partnerships. If we look at chapter 1, he's going to mention that he's joyful for the partnership the church at Philippi has with him. So again, we can see that it's important to be partnering together in order to reach out the lost and to be building up the church of Christ. Let's look at 1 Corinthians chapter 3, verses 5 to 9, David.
What then is Apollos? What is Paul? Servants through whom you believed, as the Lord assigned to each. I planted, Apollos waters, but God gave the growth. So neither he who plants nor he who waters is anything, but only God who gives the growth. He who plants and he who waters are one, and each will receive his wages according to his labor. For we are God's fellow workers. You are God's field, God's building.
So there was a division. Paul writes this letter to remind them, come on, guys. It's not about you building your own ministry. It's all about us being used by God, working together in order to build his kingdom. Okay, so here's the question. We all know that, right? We know it is biblical. We know that we can do more together than we would do on our own. The question then is, why do many people find it hard to work in collaboration? Why is it so hard for many people to work with others? This is the big question, right? We all know the reasons. The question is, why is it so hard? Jay, why is it so hard to work with others, man?
You mean?
Yeah, please.
I don't know. Sometimes it's right not to, for logical reasons. Sadly, we're tribal, fear of man if we're planting. Why do I want your church to grow bigger and more? I'm worried about my resources. I'm not really worried about your church. And I will see you at our church planting network and I will smile and I'll say, I'm praying for you. How's it going? But as you tell me your numbers, how big your church is, I'm thinking, please don't tell you. You've grown and I've not. And I'll be really discouraged if your church has grown. I want your church to die and wanting to grow.
That's Jay, I ask you just to give reasons, not to share my personal my personal thoughts with others here, man. All right, yeah, you almost messed up my whole presentation, but let me carry on. Yeah, I mean, let me point to two reasons, okay? Two main reasons, and thank you for that, Jay. So number one, selfishness, right? Selfishness is one of the reasons why many people find it hard to partner. To see other churches not as as partners, but as competition, right? That's why a lot of us would find it hard to plant a church or to work in collaboration with others. We tend to see others as competition. After a few months planting Mosaic Multicultural Church, I still recall someone who called me from a local church, and he introduced himself. And the first thing he asked me was, "Are you going to steal people from my church?" And it took me a while to understand what he was talking about. I couldn't understand it. As a Brazilian who left Brazil to come here, that was not something that came to my mind. Oh, I'm going to another country in order to reach out Christians. So I said to him, "No, that's not the reason why I am planting a church." And he said, "Okay, I'm happy to know that that you're not here in the area to steal my people." And I also recall when we officially launched Mosaic in Alefa in Castro, I met this pastor from a big church, and I was very hopeful that he wanted to meet me in order to help us to launch this new church. And the first thing he said was, "I'm very disappointed with you, Alex." And I asked him, "Why?" "Because you are planting in my area." And just to clarify, he is not in Alefa in Castro, okay? He was far from the area where I'm planting. But in his mind, that area belonged to him. So he saw Mosaic as a kind of competition. I'm mentioning these two cases, not because I've got any kind of bitterness in my heart. It's just to remind myself that I might do the same thing soon. I might do the same thing soon. So I need to be always asking myself, am I doing this for the kingdom of God, or I'm doing this for selfishness reason? The other reason, Jay mentioned it here, it's tribalism, isn't it? And I get it. We need to be careful when we are working together with those who don't share our theological views. However, although we all have our traditions, culture, theological views, our tribes can be our home, but can never become our prison. Okay, so we need to be very careful not to turn our home into a kind of prison. So now let me move to the kinds of partnership we can have with others. Okay, when we're thinking about building relationships. So we'll just skip this. We don't need this. So what kinds of partnerships do we need to have? Okay, let me show you something. That's not mine, by the way. That's from Neil Powell. He wrote a book on the same subject, and he has these four categories for partnerships, okay? The first one is the tribe partnership. It's your denomination, okay? So you would tend to work together with people who share your same theological view, okay? So they are your tribe. It might be your denomination or your fellowship if you are from FIEC. The second level of partnership is working together with like-minded people. So I'm part of commission. In commission, we've got guys from a Baptist kind of tribe. We've got Anglicans in our midst. We've got independent churches. We've got a mix of churches from different denominations, but we work together. Why? Because we are like-minded people. Secular issues are not big issues for us, if I can put it in this way. Secondary issues are not big issues for us. So we work together. We work together. There is nothing wrong. There is nothing wrong in planting church together. The third level is when things get a little bit more difficult, okay? Because now we would see the secondary issues as primary. So we tend to find it more difficult to work with those in this third level. However, here's the thing. In Elephant and Castle, I find it really difficult to work with people from a Pentecostal background, okay? A very charismatic Pentecostal background. But I force myself to at least to do evangelism with them. So whenever I am on the street, I would do evangelism with them because I don't see any problem with that. The fourth level is what Neil calls the common good. Okay, the common good. You would work with people. Okay, you would work with people who think in a different way. But you have something in common. What is it? You want to bless the community. Okay. Some would see that as a kind of social justice thing. It is. But at the same time, you can use that as a mean of engagement with the community, as a mean to evangelize the community. So I know churches here in London, they would run a food bank together. Okay. I know a church in London that runs a CAP service together. They've got the debt center, and two churches would run this together. At Mosaic Church, I took a step further. I would even partner with non-Christians, okay? I would even have partnerships with non-Christians. And let me clarify, for the common good. So I remember when we first started to run our English classes in order to get to know people, build relationships with them, and share the gospel with them. We don't have a building, okay? We don't have money. So we don't have a building. We don't have money. I needed a place in order to run the English classes. What did I do? I had to approach local businesses and say, I want to bless the community. Would you please help us to do it? And I did that in many, many different places. And one of the local coffee shops, the owner said, Alex, I like the idea and I want to work with you. You can use our venue for free. And for over 2 years, we used the venue for free. He didn't charge us at all. Alex, he was getting people inside of the coffee shop and they would buy his coffee or refreshments in general. That's why he did what he did. Nah, he did what he did because we had a partnership. The students, they rarely bought refreshments from him. But he allowed us to use the place. I also had a partnership with another coffee shop who actually gave the key to us. He would close the coffee shop and he gave the key to us so we could use the place for free in the evening while it was closed. I could spend the whole night sharing stories of partnerships with the local community, but let me share the last one. Before the lockdown, we used to meet in a venue where we pay £25 per Sunday, okay? It's a really nice place. Andy has been there. I'm not sure if Perkins has been there. But yeah, it's a really nice place. We pay £25 and they give us the refreshments for free. You can go to the coffee shop and get whatever you want. How is that even possible, Alex? We're talking about Elephant and Castle, a place that is going through regeneration. Well, it was possible because we didn't approach them as a client. We approach them as a community church that wants to bless the area. That's why they charge us a symbolic price. And even the English classes, the International Cafe, we run everything there for free. So they see that we are blessing the community. Are we doing that just for the sake of social justice? No, not at all. We bless the community, and at the same time, we engage with them and we share the gospel with them. Okay. All right. Here's my question for us to reflect. Okay. I know you all know that those kind of things. I know you all want to be partnering or working together with others. But here's my question. What are some ways you have already seen God expand his kingdom through you and your church? Okay. What are some ways you have already seen God expand his kingdom through you and your church?
Alex, I can talk about things from the perspective of a number of churches within commission, if that's helpful. So some of the churches that have tried to reach some of the more socially marginalized communities in the city, in more socioeconomically deprived areas, would not have been able to do that without partnership with London City Mission. So London City Mission, a long, well-established ministry with some historic money and a kingdom-mindedness and a willingness to work with a number of different churches. And they have buildings and they have ministers and they have training. And in one sense, they're not interested in running their own churches. They're not trying to be a denomination. They want to ensure that people in the city are reached. And so, for example, one of the churches I can think of that is flourishing is not a million miles away from Stockwell Baptist, somewhere called Hope Community Church in Vauxhall. And it meets in a London City Mission building that the minister works with others who are on the staff team at London City Mission. The work of the gospel has grown and developed there as a result of that deliberate partnership. So in one sense, the missioners are doing their stuff during the week, evangelistically turning over the ground, and yet there's a church, so the people who are evangelized can be discipled. And there's a great coming together of two concerns, and that's a sort of a constructive collaboration for the sake of the kingdom. And what you end, both organizations win, both the church and London City Mission. So that would be one idea.
Thank you. All right, before we move to a kind of Q&A, let me recommend two books you could read. One of them is Churches Partnering Together by Chris Bruno and Matt Dirks. And the other one is Together for the Gospel by Neil Powell and John James. Two good books if you want to get a little bit deeper on the subject. It'll be good if you have any questions. We've got the 5 minutes. Okay, we've got 5 minutes to a kind of Q&A. So if you have any questions or comments, please feel free to ask.
Alex, can I ask you, in what areas of ministry do you think we as church planters, perhaps especially bivocational church planters, in what areas do you think we need partnership?
I mean, in your tribe, that's essential, right? I mean, if your tribe is not supporting you, yeah. So I would say, yeah, start with your tribe. It would depend, Perkins. I mean, you know my story. I really try to build relationships with a kind of level 2 and level 3, but I didn't have a previous network here in London. So I was someone who came from another country. So it took me a while to actually start creating these relationships. So just to give an example, I tried to recruit someone in 2015 from an organization called Friends International. In 2018, we had the first conversation. It took like almost 4 years for this family to finally say, yes, Alex, we're going to join you. So so in my case, Perkins, I would say level four was key because although I was still building relationships with those who could benefit me in a quicker way, it was level four that kept me going. So it was those charities in the community, those local shops that would say, Alex, you're doing a brilliant job in the area. So things that I didn't hear from Christian organizations, I was hearing from secular business. So if you are a bivocational who don't have any kind of good relationship with level two or three, find ways to get some sort of partners on the ground. This is a difficult question.
Let me sharpen it a bit more.
Yeah.
What ministry areas do you think we need to explore partnership in? What kinds of things?
Yeah. So evangelism would be one of them. So when you mentioned London City Mission, that is great because they are going to push you to do some to do some evangelism somehow, because those guys are very intentional, right? But again, I try to get London's, okay, so here's the thing. I always wanted to have a London City Mission missionary working with me. I didn't get it. However, I had London City Mission missionaries coming to Elephant and Castle on their day off. So I've got Juan, who was a London City Mission guy in West Norwood, going to Elephant and Castle to help me. Charlotte from Stratton. Who else? A guy called Tim, who is in Bermondsey. So evangelism would be one of the areas, especially if you are trying to gather a kind of group of people. If you are trying to evangelize an area, yeah.
Alex, do you want to say a little bit more about the kind of whole TEFL thing and teaching English as a foreign language, and to what extent that kind of works, doing that with, with non-Christians, or, you know, there's sort of, I mean, actually getting a qualification, presumably that's, you know, you're going down a secular route to get that. But do you want to say a little bit more about the nuts and bolts of how that works?
Yeah, so I think, I mean, you need to try to do whatever you can in order to engage with the community, right? In my case, because I really wanted to be very diverse, I thought, okay, that's going to be a nice way to get to know first generation of migrants who would eventually bring their kids, okay, second generation and so on. So right now, I mean, just to give an example, I've got someone from church who was a lawyer, but someone who doesn't want to practice anymore so she can spend more time with her kids. So I asked her if she wanted to take a TEFL course in order to teach English as a second language. For many years, that has been really helpful for us as a church. Why? Because it helps us to engage with the community, especially with people we would never, never engage unless we had a kind of project like that. So we have a guy from Bangladesh studying the Bible with us right now from a Muslim background. If I had stopped him on the street, would I read the Bible with him as a kind of follow-up? I'm not sure, maybe. But because we built a good relationship with him through the International Cafe, actually, was not even through the English classes, but he came to practice his English. That opened a door for us to be, engaging with someone like him. Yeah. Did I answer your question?
Can I ask how then with the TEFL or any sort of things like the cafe and things like that, how do you connect the dots in the sense of going from A to B to C? Mm-hmm. because often, you know, it's really hard to connect those.
Yeah. We have a very clear pathway in our church, and many of the other planters of commission, they also would have. In our case, we've got the five E's. So we want to engage with people. In other words, we want to plow the soil, okay? We want to prepare the soil, people's heart, before we plant the seed. So the International Cafe and English classes and any other kind of common good project, we see them as, actually Perkins, he's got something called the Gospel Zero, Gospel One, right, Perkins? Your number. So in other words, the expectation of English classes, the International Cafe, the expectation is, can we build relationships here? Nothing more, nothing less. It's all about building relationships. When we build these relationships, we then invite them to have a one-to-one Bible study with us, or we invite them to come to a kind of Christianity Explored. So that's our second E. We evangelize them. But we have a pathway, David. We don't expect people to become Christians from... Actually, we have no expectations at all in regards to seeing people being saved in our English classes or International Cafe. We pray for them. We have a prayer meeting just for our contacts, but it's all about building relationships. Does it work, Alex? Well, yeah, it has been working. I mean, this Muslim guy who's been attending our Life Explored for 4 weeks, I mean, it's been a blessing. And we met him through the International Cafe. So it's good to have a pathway, David. It's good to have a pathway with the right expectations, yeah.
That's great. Thank you.